Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome into Around the Nest, Jay talking our way around the Toronto Blue Jays organization. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strasser with the Lansing Lugnuts, and we've got some business to attend to first. I've been working with the minor leaguer and making sure that we can get this show on all the platforms that we can get it onto for you to subscribe with regard to podcasts. So now we have officially been approved with Stitcher. We've got some more different platforms that we're trying to reach out to. Clearly you're listening, so you're able to figure out somehow, but we're going to do our part. And if you have comments, questions, recommendations, whatever you have, we love to do whatever we can to help you out and help us out in making sure that this show is the very best show that it can possibly be. This week on Around the Nest, we're going to talk to Jim Tarabocchi about what's going on with the Dunedin Blue Jays. We're going to speak with Adam Jacks about Yoermann Rodriguez's tremendous debut with the Lansing Lugnuts. There's going to be a lot more going on, too. Rob Bay is going to check in. Last week, we had a nooner. That stopped us really from talking to Rob, so we'll check in and see how the Seas are doing. Pat Molacaro is busy, but he sent in an update. He recorded an update for us to play. So we'll hear from Pat. Tyler Zick will check in from New Hampshire. And Zach Helton from the Advanced Rookie Bluefield Blue Jays as well. We lead off, as we always do, with Jim Tarabocchia with the Dunedin Blue Jays. So, Jim, how are you today?
Hey, Jesse, what's going on, man?
Life is good from here. Speaking of good. Dunedin, I named this show Zero Hour because what caught my eye this past week was there were a number of shutout performances that were tossed, namely for Dunedin, Máximo Castillo most recently. How was Máximo Castillo's last start?
He was about as good as you get. I mean, he gave up just one hit, and he held batters off balance all night long. You know, there's one thing I talked about this week with somebody that the quality start statistic, especially at the minor league level, kind of goes by the wayside as you get later on in the season. I think with Máximo the other night, he easily could have gotten that quality start, but he was lifted because of, you know, pitch count reasons, development reasons, whatever the case may be. So, like I said, with Max, he's been going well as of late, and to see him pitch that well, he was locked in. I love seeing that with Max. I've always been a huge fan of what he can do on the mound, and I look forward pretty much at this point every start to going out there and watching him pitch and just to see that maturity. You know, I know Clearwater offensively right now is struggling, but to see that this maturity of Máximo continue to evolve. I mean, he hasn't lost since the 25th of June, and his ERA is hovering right around 2.5 in his last, I think, seven starts. So that should tell you something right there. So, I really enjoy watching Máximo Castillo pitch every fifth day, and it just continued this week.
It came up on a prior show after Ross Atkins mentioned that 20 starters in the system checked all the boxes. And I'm looking at Bluebird Banter's Around the Nest thread, everybody commenting any different topics that they want us to talk about. One thing that came up is, forget the big league potential starters, let's talk big league potential relievers. So this all began with Downtown Michael Brown's question, are there any relievers in the system that seem like they have potential to succeed in the big leagues? I think that's a rather great question to have as an overarching theme for the show. So looking over your DJs, looking at your bullpen, and even the guys who've moved on, who do you think has the potential to succeed in the big leagues in the Toronto Blue Jays pen?
Well, I think Brad Wilson certainly comes to mind, Danny Jimenez. Right now, looking at our roster, Jackson Reese, just looking at Sean Rakowski. I know it's been a short time that he's only been here, but he has succeeded here at the advanced day level. You know, there's one thing I think that that says something about this team, this Dunedin team right now, and it connects back to your question where it's hard to say without bias, you know, hey, our pitching staff or our hitting is the best in the league. That's great, good. But I think a proper measurable of your team is looking at how deep your lineup might be, how you can stack up on certain days, maybe putting certain guys in certain positions in the order that can create and provide mismatches throughout the game. And looking at it from the pitching side, right now I look at this Dunedin roster and I say, well, you know, we've got seven guys probably who can make a start on any given day. That's a lot for any team, really. That's pretty impressive. And then you look at the bullpen and how deep that is with the three guys I just mentioned, Sean Rakowski, Jackson Reese, two guys I just mentioned, and even throw in Kyle Weatherly in there as well. And all of a sudden, you have probably the deepest pitching staff, which I believe we do, in the entire league. So to me, those are the guys that stand out as relievers, and they help not just because of their talent and their ability to command the zone, but their ability as a whole to stretch out the pitching staff to make it longer, make it deeper, and make it that much more stronger.
Looking at the offense, Cullen Large has been promoted. Logan Warmoth has been promoted. Riley Adams has been promoted. These were big offensive performance for you. And so right now for this Dunedin team, who are you looking at and leading the way offensively?
I think it's going to be a mix of guys. I think losing, the guys we have, that's tough to replace. I think Reggie Pruitt has provided a spark at the top of the order with his speed. Chavez Young right now on a career-best 14-game hitting streak, 16 of 17, 22 of 25, batting in the number two spot. Ryan Noda as well, Alejandro Kirk, Demi Oromoloye, Kevin Acuna at the bottom of the order, Samad Taylor hit a home run last weekend. It's not just going to be one guy. It's not going to be just one guy, who's going to provide that offensive spark. But right now, those guys are at the Double A level. It's going to be a mixture of guys, like I just said, with 6-7 guys that, and then of course, at the bottom of the order, that are going to sprinkle that in and help this team really succeed. So I think offensively, that's how we're sort of going to line up here.
What are you looking forward to as this season goes on? You know that you're in the playoffs. What do you still want to see before the regular season comes to an end?
Well, I think try to maybe rip off another winning streak. I think that's something that, providing that momentum that we could, we could get going into the postseason. Because I think right now with whoever we play, in the postseason, it's going to be tough, especially on the south side of things. So I think there's momentum that's needed going into the postseason.
At Jim Terra on Twitter is Jim Terabokia's Twitter handle. Jim leading off the show today. Thank you very much, Jim.
All right. Thank you very much, Jesse.
The voice of the Dunedin Blue Jays. We're currently in action, as a matter of fact. Dunedin playing right now a nice early game. And from a advanced Dunedin, we promote ourselves right up the ladder. That same path that, let's say, a Cullen Large took. We find ourselves with Tyler Zickel and the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. Zick, how are you?
Jesse, I am fabulous. Happy Friday from the Granite State. The Fisher Cats rolled into town 4:30 a.m. this morning after their first four-game series victory. 4 games, 3 days, Nice Egg Stadium in the Parlor City, Binghamton, New York. The Cats are on the up and up. Watch out, late August.
Okay, I have to ask about Cullen Large. He's a great guy. His name is wonderful. Have you played any Mr. Big stuff or anything else fun from Mr. Large?
So here's the great part about Cullen, Jesse. We are feeling great about having him with us here, and we are trying to stockpile as much of that content as we can to finish the season strong. We're only at home for 3 games this weekend against the future Red Sox, the Portland Sea Dogs, but we finish with 8 in a row against first the Mets affiliate, then those dastardly Yankees. So we're going to have all sorts of Cullen fun in that last homestand, and barring an even more impressive spring next year as opposed to his season this year in advanced day, if we get Cullen back, we're going to turn that Large antic up to 11, if you will.
I think that's great. With Tyler Zickel talking Double-A New Hampshire Fisher Cats. Hey, some history for the Fisher Cats. First, back-to-back shutouts for the first time since July 2017. First four-game series win of this year. And consecutive 1-0 wins for the first time since 2005. You are making history on a daily basis.
You know, that's exactly it, Jesse. You thought coming off last year's championship season when there were records made seemingly every other day, whether it's all-time records, single-season records, franchise records, what have you. You know, we didn't necessarily expect record-making in 2019 the same way, but certainly nice for the guys to put together their longest consecutive scoreless inning streak to get those two back-to-back 1-0 victories. Now, yesterday's win, the 1-0 getaway day win in Binghamton, which was more like getaway night thanks to Mother Nature, that was certainly a little bit rain shortened. We only played seven, but I'm counting it. It's certainly a history thanks to the incomparable Bob Lippman.
And from things that we don't see a lot to things that we see a lot, it's 0 hour. Let's talk shutout baseball. Let's talk Nate Pearson. How good was he?
You know, I will say this. I think Nate had his most complete performance of the season last night. Obviously, we've seen a little bit better numbers, better line score, if you will, in the game. He's gone hitless before. He's obviously kept teams off the scoreboard like he did last night. But it wasn't easy for Nate yesterday. He had at least one base runner on in all six of the innings that he worked, but he was able to navigate those troubles with ease. And in fact, aplomb, if I may say so myself, and for him to handle those miniature obstacles each and every inning and to stay as dialed in and to be able to locate his secondary pitches like he did last night just speaks volumes to the work that he's done since he's risen to AA from Advanced A Dunedin. And I really loved from Nate last night when he got pulled from the game after a two-out double in the sixth inning. He had reached his pitch limit of 101 pitches. In fact, I think he was at 100 he was supposed to be, but manager Mike Mordecai wanted to give him a chance to see the inning through. But as soon as Morty emerged from the third base dugout in Binghamton last night, Nate, who as we know is calm, cool, and collected more times than not, had certainly a show of emotion on the mound of wanting to stay in the game. So obviously we know what kind of competitor he is and is chomping at the bit to be completely off the leash sooner rather than later.
Our next candidate for 0 hour, Gency Diaz. He's back from the major leagues and he's back in a groove. How was his last shutout start?
He was really nice, Jesse. He had certainly fallen out of the form that saw him have an incredible June and put him into the mix for that call-up that he got to enjoy in early August. August 4th, I believe, was the day he made his debut. And upon his return to New Hampshire, both Tyler Murray and myself, we spoke with him separately, and to each of us, he expressed the sentiment that his legs felt like jelly, and it certainly was a big moment for him that he was so grateful for, but now is feeling so much better to have that experience under his belt. So for him to go out and do what he did the other night in Binghamton against a team certainly familiar with what Yancey can bring, he certainly kept them off balance all night long. And to go five innings and give up just three hits and, of course, put up five donuts as well, just a testament to what he's been able to do this year in AA.
From Bluebird Banter, that great question. All right, any relievers check the box for you? Any guys that you see in your bullpen or maybe players promoted from your bullpen up to Buffalo who you say major league potential to help out the Jays relief corps?
Indeed. You know, I'll touch on two guys who are no longer with the Fisher Cats and are continuing to excel with Buffalo. That's Brian Baker, who has been discussed, of course, and Jackson McClelland, whose ERA is still at zero in AAA after getting the promotion a couple of weeks ago from New Hampshire. Obviously, we know Jackson has incredible heat and is able to, when he's in command of that heater, pretty much get any batters out. And I would be willing to bet, I'd actually love to see Jackson McClelland go toe-to-toe with some of those big-name big leaguers like Cody Bellinger, Christian Yelich, Mike Trout, some of those guys. Power versus power and see what Jackson can do. And as for guys who are currently on our roster, Jim already mentioned Danny Jimenez as he continued to show what he is all about this weekend, or rather this week in Binghamton. He converted his fourth of four save opportunities. So Danny's got the stuff, needs a little more seasoning as many of the guys do. That's why they're in AA and looking for an opportunity to get better. But for us on the current roster, Danny Jimenez is certainly a guy who you circle and say he could be pitching in the big league sooner rather than later.
Let's go back to the offense. Chad Spanberger was picked up in the Sung Wan Oh deal. He started slow, as did a lot of your hitters in New Hampshire. He's picked it up as of late. 10-game hitting streak just came to an end. What had you seen from the big man?
You know, I think for Chad, it's great to see him put together what has been his best stretch of the season, batting .389 during that 10-game hitting streak. And for him, he's a guy, you look at him and you think, man, this is a guy who's going to crush balls all over the yard. He's going to, you know, be certainly a left-handed power threat. And I don't think the power numbers had necessarily shown up as many thought they would. In the first half of the season, he's got double-digit home runs. He's hit 11 this year and is in the mix for team lead in RBI. But the consistency of contact, whether it is singles, which a lot of those 10-game hitting streak hits were just single-base hits, but he also has a propensity to hit doubles. He's among league leaders in that category as well. So really no better way to finish his double-A campaign in Toronto's organization than with the August that he's had, batting north of 350 in August as well. So certainly looking for Chad to finish strong. And will we see him here in New Hampshire next year? Who knows? I hope not. I hope we don't see anybody back in New Hampshire next year and they continue their ascent. But certainly a guy who can say from start to finish has had a productive 2019.
It's such a truism of minor league baseball. Hey, I love you. Get out of here. I never want to see your face again, except if I'm watching on TV.
Exactly.
Tyler Zickel, Tyler_Zickel is how you can find the man on Twitter. The Zick is New Hampshire Fisher Cats Baseball with Tyler Murray and Bob Littman. Zick, thank you so much.
Jesse, my pleasure. Cheers to Around the Nest, as always. And up and down the system, let's go Blue Jays.
That's what I'm talking about. Let's bring in Rob Fay now, talking Vancouver Canadians. Rob, how are you?
Much better this week. Canadians are playing quite well, so happy team, happy broadcaster.
I've got a specific question for you from the Bluebird Banter comments thread on Around the Nest. The very first question posted was for you, and then we'll start to get more into the Canadians, but here we go. Manoah and Kloffenstein have both had some very impressive starts recently. What sort of secondary stuff does each of them throw? Are they successful with their off-speed pitches, or are they simply overpowering hitters? Rob, your thoughts.
Well, my thoughts when it comes to, we'll start with Mount Manoah, the first rounder. Fastball primarily. If he can start to spot the slider, which is his secondary pitch, a little bit better, I think he's just going to be too overpowering, especially for the Northwest League. I would assume that they're going to leave him here, just finish out the circuit, and then they'll get back to spring training and see the full repertoire of his pitches. But right now, it's primarily spotting the fastball, and it's a slider that when it's on is really nasty. He had 7 strikeouts in 3 innings 2 starts ago, which made everybody's eyebrows raise because that's when the secondary stuff was working. He dabbles with the changeup, but very rarely in an inning will you see it, maybe once or twice. So basically, for this conversation, the two-pitch pitcher. When it comes to Adam Kloffenstein, right now he's got a sinker that is devastating. And I know it's a pitch that certain organizations are trying to get away from. They want to go with more spin rate. They want to go slider, slider, slider. And, you know, Adam's got a good slider as well. But he's got 5 pitches right now. And in a game that he pitched last night for the Canadians where he struck out 8 over 5, you saw all 5 of them. Which for an 18-year-old kid, he doesn't turn 19 until the 25th of this month. He's really extraordinary that he can actually spot up most of those pitches. But his sinker, his changeup, those secondary pitches right now are on mark, and they are unhittable.
The other pitcher, who really has opened up my eyes, and we'll set aside these two guys. They come in. One's a third rounder in 2018. One's a first rounder in 2019. Luis Quiñones is none of those things. And at the last time he took them out, I saw 4 innings, hitless, scoreless. He strikes out 8. How has it been watching Quiñones, the 34th rounder?
Well, what's funny about him is he's a piggyback guy. So he's a guy that always just kind of chimes in the 4th or the 5th inning, and he has been outstanding. And I don't know if there's truth to the guy that comes in 2nd actually has a bit of an advantage because he's had to see the lineup turn over maybe once, even twice. But for me right now, he's as good as anybody in our rotation, and that includes the 2 blue-chip guys. And the reason is he can keep, and I love it. He works a little slow for my liking. I like guys that, you know, get the ball back from the catcher and they're ready to snap off the next one. He works at his own speed, but boy, does he come out with a game plan. And, you know, you see these kids from San Jacinto, which is a powerhouse junior college down in Texas, and it's mostly guys that are all fastball, fastball, fastball. We've got Mike Pasco, also from the same school, also drafted in the same year, and he's just, how hard can I throw it? He wants to throw it through the brick wall. Quiñones has got a lot of finesse. There's a lot of pitchability to him, and I think that's a part of the reason that he's been good. He's a guy that comes in middle of the game with a plan and executes his pitches perfectly, and he's been maybe the best-kept secret outside of Luke Gillingham this season.
Do you mind me sharing this secret? Do you mind me saying, secrets are now exposed. Here are the guys who've been good for Vancouver.
Well, yes, Jesse, because I know as soon as our team sinks a little bit lower than we are in the standings, it is a one-way ticket to Lansing to help you guys. So take away, Jesse. Take whatever you need. It's fine by me.
I believe that you just said that the other best-kept secret was Luke Gillingham. Would you like to expound on that?
Well, here's a guy that didn't pick up a baseball for 1.5 years because he was on a USS Destroyer. which doesn't happen every day. A kid out of Naval Academy had one of the highest strikeout totals in the nation back in the day, didn't pick up a baseball for nearly 2 years, and now as this season gets into the second half and deeper into the second half, outstanding. 5 strikeouts in 2 innings. He's got a big 12-6 curveball. He's got a nasty east-west slider. And right now, Luke Gillingham out of the bullpen is absolutely the ace in our deck. And the beauty about him is he's a lefty that, again, also works at his own pace and takes his time. And, you know, it's funny. I was talking with our new pitching coach, and I'm so used to saying Jim Cykowski over the years. But Dimitri Kokaris is a guy that's got some driveline experience, really works with these pitchers. And I said to him, I said, if we had a one-game winner-take-all, who's the guy you're bringing out of the bullpen? He didn't even let me finish my sentence. He goes, Luke Gillingham's the guy. So to go from a USS Destroyer where you're not even picking up a baseball to being the one guy in a one-game winner-take-all situation, that, in my estimation, Jesse, is big-time progress.
The question that I've been asking everybody on Around the Nest, the question that came from Bluebird Banter, I think you might have just answered. However, I'll ask it anyway. any relievers in your bullpen who you think have major league potential?
Ooh, that's a great question. I mean, there's a lot of guys that I think can succeed at this level and maybe even up in the Midwest League. But I would probably say Luis Quiñones is a guy that you're going to have to keep your tabs on just because he's got the big frame as well. If you were to ask me a best guy out of the bullpen in a couple of years, and I know I'm going to hear it for saying this, Alec Manoa is a guy that I think one day is going to come out of the back of the Blue Jays bullpen. I know that you draft first-rounders to become starters, guys that could chew up 200 innings and yada, yada, yada. But I just look at that body and I think to myself, I don't know. I just see a closer as opposed to a starter. And nobody's going to want me to say that, but I just look at that frame. I look at that physique. I look at the style of the way that he pitches. And he's got closer written all over him. And maybe one day I'll be right.
Rob, let's wrap up with this because you said that you were in such a good mood. Canadians playing much better baseball. Over the course of this past week's worth of games, what stood out to you?
You know what? We cleaned up the defense. And I think as a broadcaster at any level, so long as your team competes and plays good, fine baseball, you take the wins and the losses. And I know it's short season right now. It's a developmental league. Nobody really cares about the wins and losses outside of the fans, the old broadcaster, and maybe a couple of guys on the team that are competitive. But the Blue Jays right now just want to get their guys some at-bats, some innings pitched, want to see how the glove works, and, you know, just the fundamentals of the game. And then they'll get them to spring training and off they go. But for me right now, clean baseball equals enjoyable baseball to broadcast. Some timely hitting that we got down in Eugene. And then last night with a 1-0 victory, we got to see a couple of pitchers connect on a really good outing as far as what they did from the bump. So, it's you know what, the Canadians are what they are. They go into the postseason. It would take something pretty much miraculous at this point. But just the fact that they've cleaned it up and are playing enjoyable baseball to watch, that's good enough for me. And that makes a happy broadcaster.
I will drink to that. At Rob Fay on Twitter. Rob, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Take care, Jesse.
Rob Fay, the voice of the Vancouver Canadiens. Now let me bring in Zach Helden with the Advanced Rookie Bluefield Blue Jays. Zach, how are you this week?
Fantastic. Other than watching us drop a few, we're coming into the dog days of summer, and it feels like it here in Bluefield. It's warmer than usual, but the baseball has been kind of wishy-washy at best, but, it's always good to be a Blue Jays fan, and here in Bluefield, the fans are still coming out and supporting these guys nonetheless.
My secret, as Adam Jaxer could tell you, is I sacrifice my voice, and during a hot day, I will eat ice cream during the game, or I will eat frozen lemonade during the game, because that really keeps me perked up. Do you have a secret during a hot game?
Usually, especially in Bluefield, it's the air-conditioned city, so it doesn't usually get too hot. But the great thing about Bluefield is if it goes over 90 degrees, they give out free lemonade. So I'm right there with you, Jesse. Frozen lemonade, maybe mixing in something a little extra to lighten the mood, but always a frozen lemonade close by, or maybe just some lukewarm water, always good to the voice.
You have me Googling this. Nature's air-conditioned city is Bluefield.
Yes.
How? How did it pick up that nickname?
It's so highly elevated. It's the highest elevated town in Virginia. And, you know, we're right on the border of West Virginia and Virginia. Now, the airport where the actual, you know, National Weather Service temperature is taken is even higher. It's up on a hill outside the city. So it rarely gets 90 degrees there. Now, even at the ballpark here, it's down a little lower in elevation, and it's a few miles away from the airport, but it's always rather warmer here than it is at the airport. But they go by the National Weather Service temperature over there at the airport, and when it hits 90 degrees here, they give out free lemonade all across town, and they even have a lemonade fest every year, which is coming up in a few weeks. So, Jesse, if you can just hop on down and join me for a broadcast, we'll indulge on a lot of lemonade if you want.
I'm coming. I'm reading all about the annual Lemonade Festival right now, the free lemonade for the city if it meets the conditions. This is great. A question that I had for you, and this is, once again, we'll get to baseball, I promise. I happened to mention that Bluefield was in West Virginia, and I said it near the wrong guy, and he took high umbrage, and he said, the parking lot is West Virginia, the ballpark is Virginia. How important is it to the people who live there? What's West Virginia, and what's Virginia?
Well, the actual state line kind of runs right through the outfield here at Bowen, and, you know, there's a lot of disputing on that, but here with the Blue Jays, it's not so big because both Bluefield, Virginia and Bluefield, West Virginia kind of embrace the Jays as their own. And even last year, you know, my checks from the Bluefield Blue Jays come from a West Virginia address, but the Virginia state governor was here last year on his minor league baseball tour, so take that as you will. But Graham High School, which is on the Virginia side, and Bluefield High School, which is on the West Virginia side, you can also Google this. They have a huge, huge football game at the beginning of every season. Mitchell Stadium, which is on the other end of the parking lot, actually on the West Virginia side where both high schools play their games. That thing fills up maybe 12,000 to 14,000 for a high school game here in the first, and it is huge. First week of the season, they shut down this parking lot, a lot of tailgating for a high school game. It is a sight to see. So once you get into football season and in rest of the seasons, sports-wise, it is Virginia versus West Virginia. But the Blue Jays, though, they kind of conjoin in the summer and be friendly, a little bit civil, but still competitive nonetheless.
I like a little bit civil. All right, about your Bluefield Blue Jays, what stands out to you from this past week's worth of action?
You know, it's been up and down a little bit. The Jays come back from Bristol in their Northeast Tennessee trip, having a couple of rough games at Bristol. Last night, they got up early on the Reds of Greenville and then got into the bullpen, and the wheels kind of came off. But, you know, this team is battling. Luis Hurtado in his first year as managing here is just outside the park. Right now they're taking BP, keeping things very upbeat. The guys are competing to this day, even though, you know, it's very grim on the playoff picture, 11 games back with, I think, 13 to go. But, you know, second place, 6.5 back of second place, so there's an outside chance. A lot of you know, crazy things can happen in baseball, but these guys are still competing, still getting better, and, you know, you got to be a fan of that. No matter what level it is, guys just not giving up and getting better every day. And the Jays have got a great staff here. Luis Hurtado, Chris Schaefer, Rafael Lazo, and Paul. These guys are just keeping these guys baseball mode, and they're making work fun. And these guys, you know, despite having an under 500 year at the moment, these guys are still working, and they're looking towards the bigger goal in this organization. And I think the guys at Toronto are taking notice to that.
The question from Around the Nest from Bluebird Banter, our SB Nation partner, all about which relievers do you believe have major league potential? Well, you're a long ways away, and yet you can look at your arms and you can say, there's something interesting here. There might be something that causes a guy to stand out. Any names come to mind for you?
I'll be honest with you, Jesse. Austin Havkost, he hasn't been here in Bluefield very long, but it went from, who is this guy, to, oh, I feel good about this guy coming in late. He's got a couple of saves, and usually if he comes in eighth, ninth inning with the Blue Jays with a lead, you got to feel comfortable about Bluefield getting the win. He is a tremendous arm, and he is a bulldog on the mound. He goes at hitters. It doesn't matter whether they're the cleanup hitter or the nine-hole hitter. He has a very heavy fastball, and he throws it right in there and will work the corners. And he's a fun guy to watch. I think he could be a middle reliever, maybe even a closer type on down the road. He's certainly been a great closer here in Bluefield. And I don't suspect he'll come back next year. I'll be kind of upfront about that. He made a late push here to Bluefield, but I think he'll be up the chain next year and maybe with you, Jesse, and Lansing.
Yeah, that's something that came up with Tyler Zickle, that whole, get out of here, go. Go make yourself famous and we'll be proud of you. That's fun for me, too, that it's not the natural progression of guys to go Bluefield, Vancouver to Lansing. How many guys, when you looked at the Lansing roster to start this year, did you say, hey, that guy made the jump and maybe I wasn't expecting it?
Yeah, it's always that. That's one of the things, especially because you guys start so much earlier than us. It's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But, Alejandro Kirk, he's made a few jumps this year, and none of that is unexpected at all. He mashed the baseball here in Bluefield, and he was very Vlad-esque. And I won't put him in the Vladdy Jr. category yet, but he was one of those guys you could sit in the concourse and hear him take BP, and you're like, oh, Alejandro's up at the plate. Let's go watch him take BP. You can hear off the bat guys like Vlad, guys like Kurt. You can tell it's a different hitting swing and just right off the barrel of the bat every time. And Alejandro Kirk never gets cheated on a swing. He'll swing out of his shoes on 0-2. And more so than not, he's usually putting it a long way. And he's one of those guys, I think he'll jump maybe another level or so pretty quickly.
Oh, he's going up to AA New Hampshire next year, no doubt in my mind. And then the major leagues is just around the corner. And he was just in Bluefield last year. It's like Vladdy Jr. was in Bluefield 3 years ago, Lansing 2 years ago, and look what he's doing right now. Zach Helden, the voice of the Bluefield Blue Jays. Zach, thank you so much.
Jesse, always a pleasure, my man.
Right, and from Zach, and you can find him on Twitter at Z_Helden, the voice of the Advanced Rookie Jays affiliate. Let me bring in Adam Jackson. Let's talk some Lansing Lugnuts baseball. Adam, how are you?
Jesse, I'm outstanding, and let me tell you, I appreciate you lobbying with Rob to try and get us some more talented guys up here in Lansing. Only 18 games left to go, so whatever they got, go ahead and send them our way. We're trying to make the playoffs here.
I thought I was being pretty sly. He saw right through me, huh? With the Lansing Lugnuts, you know, I'm talking Yoermann Rodriguez. Vancouver sent him up. Guess what? We're happy to have him. Your thoughts on 5 days with Yoermann?
Yeah, I guess we should stop ourselves and thank Rob at least for sending us your man. Well, Jesse, he's been our man. He's been the Lugnuts' best hitter here through this stretch. Lansing just had won 5 straight, their longest streak of the season, and certainly one of the reasons they did so is because of their offense. And Rodriguez has been hitting everything. I mean, he had great numbers, high 300 average, a lot of extra base hits in Vancouver, and he started that same type of tear in Lansing. He's continued a hitting streak that was at 14 games. He's had a hit in every single game. He's got 9 RBIs already for the Lugnuts, getting a couple of triples. He's got some doubles. And most importantly, clutch hitting. And you look at his numbers right now with Vancouver, a guy that doesn't strike out much. He comes up to Lansing. You pop him in the top of the order with a guy like Gabriel Moreno and an Otto Lopez, and then power supplied by Griffin Conine. He just fits in perfectly in the top 4 spots in that order. So he has been a tremendous addition, and I think he's certainly a key factor in why the Lugnuts have strung together their longest winning streak of the season.
Yeah, how about that 5-game winning streak? It came to an end yesterday. What did you take away from it?
Well, the main thing, Yoermann Rodriguez wasn't in the lineup, right, Jesse? Simple as that. Put the guy in the lineup, he'll win games. He got a day off yesterday. I mean, yesterday with the Lugnuts, it was just a lot of errors, a lot of self-inflicted mistakes, and they didn't play a complete game. Through that 5-game stretch, you and I have talked a lot this season about how Lansing has been a .500 team. They've been really good at times. They've really struggled. Well, for the first time this season since mid-April, they put that goodness together throughout 5 different games. They were pitching well, starting and relievers. They were getting clutch hits, delivering with 2 outs or runners in scoring position. And their defense, which for the most part has been extraordinary throughout this season, was just as good in that stretch. Now, yesterday when they lost, they committed 4 errors, they didn't pitch it as well, and they didn't have the timely hits that they had been getting to get runs. So I don't think it's anything to panic about. Again, down the stretch, I feel comfortable right now with the way that the Lugnuts have been playing, that they've got a real shot to make the playoffs if they just continue that consistency they've shown us over the last couple of weeks.
There was a specific game that stood out over the course of the winning streak, and that was the one batter away from perfection. Troy Watson in Gayden, followed by Will McAffer, and then followed by Cree Finfrock in the Lugnuts 6-0 win, and only a one-out double, or one-out triple, by Miles Gordon in the bottom half of the sixth inning in Dayton, Ohio. That stopped the Lansing Lugnuts from firing the perfect first perfect game in franchise history. What do you remember from that game?
Well, it was quick, and it was very efficient. I mean, extraordinary start from Troy Watson. Let's start with him, Jesse. He goes through the first 16 batters of the game, hadn't given up a hit, hadn't given up a base runner. As you said, he was perfect through five and a third innings, and then he gives up the triple with one out, and then he's able to still work out of that jam and eliminate any chance for Dayton to score. And then right behind him, Will McAffer was excellent. His first stint since contributing in the Pan Am games with Canada, he comes back, strikes out the side. And Cree Finfrock, who's leading the Midwest League with 16 saves, does what he does best. He came in and shut the door in the ninth. So to me, for Troy Watson, it was really about the fastball velocity. And you and I touched on it on the broadcast. We had seen a low 90s fastball from Watson. He's not a high strikeout pitcher, but he pitches it in the zone. He usually gets good contact, and his defense has been able to pick him up because, again, the Lansing Lugnut defense has been pretty solid throughout the season. Well, that day in Dayton, we saw mid-90s to 96, 97 on the gun from Watson, and that's something we haven't seen all season. So that extra velocity and still commanding the zone helped him get a couple of more strikeouts, and he just looked locked in, which was great to see. A guy that got here in Lansing, struggled at the start, but has continued to grow and develop as this 2019 season has gone on.
Speaking with Adam Jacks about the Lansing Lugnuts, who today continue their seven-game homestand and play game number three in the series against the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. Talking to Rob Fay, he said, playoffs are going to be tough. Zach Helton said the same thing about Bluefield. The Lansing Lugnuts playoff situation is different. Adam, what are the Lugnuts playoff scenarios?
Yeah, I mean, for the first time in really a couple months, I feel very optimistic about their chances. Again, you know, we're not going to lie to the people that we're broadcasting to. You and I have said it. They've been a 500 baseball team up and down, and until they show us something different, we had nothing else to go off of. Well, this recent stretch of good starting pitching, solid relieving out of the back end, and then the clutch hitting and that defense that's essentially been there all season – this is a Lugnuts team that has hopefully not just dangled the carrot in front of us, and they're going to continue to play like this. But you look at the stretch of games that they have left. What is it, 18 or 19 games to go? The majority of those games are against teams that are below them in the standings. You're talking Fort Wayne and Dayton. They only have one series left with Great Lakes, who's been tremendous all year long. And then their pivotal series is coming up with South Bend. The Lansing coming into tonight's game is one game back of South Bend to try and get into the playoffs. They'll play a three-game series. If they could win that series, even if they took one game out of that series, you still favor their chances to get in with the teams that are below them in the standings. Well, South Bend's still got to play Bowling Green, who's in first place right now in the second half of the Eastern Division. So those two have to kind of duke it out. Well, Lansing, if they simply just keep winning and take care of the teams that they've showed they're better than in the standings in the first half and the second half, I really think their chances are good. Again, they don't have that standout starter right now. They don't have that, I would say, a standout guy right now. They've had a core of different hitters that have helped them around, and they've got a core of pitchers, whether it be starting rotation or the relievers, that have really improved as the season has gone on. I think the biggest thing, though, is this is still a very tight-knit group. They really enjoy being around each other. You can tell they enjoy competing with each other, and they know, just like everybody else, there's a limited amount of time to try and pick it up and win to get into the playoffs here as we're coming down the stretch. So I'd say they have a really good chance to get in the playoffs, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're competing here at the end of August in the postseason.
Speaking to Adam Jaxa, who broadcasts Lansing Lugnuts games with me and Around the Nest, you can find him on Twitter, at Adam Jaxa. Adam, thank you very much.
All right, Jesse, thank you.
Now, Adam has complained in the past that I then hang up on him, like I hang up on all the other broadcasters, when it's time for me to move on to the next person. All I've done is I've muted him, because we have an Adam interview for you next. he had the chance to sit down with Will McAffer. McAffer, the Lansing Lugnuts right-hander out of the bullpen, who, oh, by the way, just won a silver medal as a member of Team Canada in the Pan Am Games down in Peru. They fell to the Puerto Rican team in the championship game, the gold medal game. And so why not talk to Will all about that experience? Adam did exactly that. Here's his conversation with Will.
Adam Jackson now joined by reliever for the Lugnuts, Will McAffer, and we want to hear all about your trip to the Pan American Games with Team Canada. Tell us first how you received the invitation to play with them.
So I've been talking to Dallas McPherson, our manager, a little bit. He said that they had shown some interest in bringing me. It wasn't a for sure thing, so it just kind of kept me posted, and then I actually got named as an alternate originally, and one of the pitchers on the team wasn't able to come due to, I think it was a visa issue or something. So then Greg Hamilton, the manager, called me and invited me to come play for them, which is pretty sweet.
What was that moment like when he called? I mean, who are some of the people that you told right away, or that some of the thoughts that you had?
We were actually at breakfast on the road somewhere. I forget where we were, but we were eating breakfast, and I just got a phone call, and I knew noticed the area code is Ontario, so I kind of had an idea who it was. So I stepped out and I spoke to him, and then I told the guys I was eating breakfast with right then, and then after that I called my parents, called my girlfriend, just to let them know, because they all knew like it was a possibility, but it was a little different than it being a for sure thing that I was gonna go. So yeah, pretty awesome moment.
You go down to Peru. You've been, obviously, to Canada, where you grow up. You've been to the United States. Have you been to any other countries outside of those two?
Yeah, I've been around a lot, actually. I've been to Japan a couple times, Australia, New Zealand, Korea briefly on a layover. I've been actually down to Quito. I went and visited the Galapagos Islands. And then now I can add Peru to the list. I've been to Europe as well. So, yeah, I kind of been around. Most of it's for baseball. A couple of them are vacations, but yeah, mostly for baseball with Team Canada. But yeah, Peru is a really interesting country. And yeah, we didn't get to see a ton of it because we were playing baseball the whole time. But what I saw of it, I really liked. The weather was a little odd because it was obviously winter down there. And for some reason, their winters are super foggy. Apparently, that's normal down there. So we didn't see the sun once for 10 days or whatever we were there. It's kind of different, but it was a nice change of pace from the hot summer we've been having here to go down there and get a little cool air.
No fog delays before the games or anything?
No, luckily not. And honestly, a couple days it looked like it might, but we didn't get any delays, which is good.
We're talking with Will McAffer, who participated in the Pan Am Games with Canada. You win the silver medal. Take us through what the actual games and the experience was like playing baseball there.
Yeah, so the first round is just a round robin. You just get split into two pools. There's eight teams total, so 4-4. We ended up going 3-0, which landed us firmly in the super round, which is like the second round of play. You're one of the games from the first round with whatever other team from your pool that made it. That game counts for the second round as well, so we kind of went into the second round 1-0. Ended up going 1-1 in that pool, so our record was 2-1 essentially. Which was good enough to land us in a gold medal game against Puerto Rico. I threw against Puerto Rico in the super round. That was my first appearance. I threw 2 2/3, I believe. 2 1/3, something like that. It did not bad. It did pretty well. It's just good to get my feet wet, kind of show the coaching staff what I could do, because they hadn't seen me pitch in person in a couple of years at least. So, yeah, it was good. And then gold medal game, we fell 6-1 to Puerto Rico. I ended up facing three batters that game. It was a great experience. You know, sucks we couldn't come out with a gold medal, but it's nice to get a medal at least.
How good does it feel to play for your country?
Oh, it's awesome. It's the greatest experience ever. It's just always an honor when you get that opportunity to wear the name across your chest. That's an opportunity I'm never going to turn down. If I ever get the opportunity to play for my country, for those guys, great group of guys, I'll always say yes.
And how long were you actually in Peru?
We sat down to West Palm Beach for 2 days to play some exhibition games just to get our feet under us, and then flew down to Peru. I think we were there for, I want to say, 10 days. I think we were there for 2 days, 2 or 3 days prior to starting, and then we had one off day, six total games. So yeah, I think 10 days.
Do you feel like you're living a double life in between this long Lansing Lugnuts full season and then, oh, here's a tournament with Canada right in the middle of it all?
Yeah, it was definitely different, like going from this team that I've been with for like 100 games, just going over there, meeting, I knew maybe three guys on the team before going there, so meeting all of them, getting to know them. And the good thing about that, that group is they were very tightly knit and everyone got together really well, so you kind of, even after only spending a week, 10 days together, it felt like you've known the guys for a while. So it was super, super inviting atmosphere. So yeah, it was a little weird because like I go there, I meet all these guys super fast, get to know them really well, and then all of a sudden I'm gone. And I'm, you know, probably half the guys I might never see again. I don't know. Like it's kind of crazy how fast it all happened.
We're talking with Will McCaffert, now done with the Pan Am Games, back with the Lugnuts the rest of the way, as you guys have just 19 left to go, a game back of the playoffs. What's it going to take to find a way to keep winning and get into those playoffs at the end of the year?
It's just going to take a lot of focus and effort. We've been doing really well lately. If we keep playing baseball the way we do, I could see us making a good playoff run. Yeah, guys have been throwing the ball well. We've been swinging it, so that's really all you need. If you, you know, pitch, play good defense, timely hitting, that's all you need to win a championship. And I think those are all really starting to come together. Earlier in the year, we'd have, you know, maybe one of the three or two of the three, but now I think all three of them are really coming together, and yeah, it shows in the scores.
So Will McCaffert discussing matters with Adam Jackson with the Lansing Lugnuts after coming back from winning the silver medal at the Pan Am Games down in Peru. The question that was given to us, hey, via Bluebird Banter, any prospects for long-term major league pitching, major league relief work in the Toronto Blue Jays pen? Well, Jackson Reese has already gone up, and his name came up on the thread. How about Jackson Reese? The question about what's his story? I love this. All right, so Eric T. posting, what's the story on him? Where was he before last year that his first professional season came as a 24-year-old? He first went to JUCO, and there he fought through injuries his first couple of years. And after that, he contacted a ton of different colleges. University of Hawaii got back to him. He decided, all right, I'm going to go play at Hawaii. And there he went to pitch for two more years. And he was signed as a senior. He was signed after last year. He was signed at the conclusion of his final year of eligibility, pitching at the University of Hawaii, where he was their number one starter. All right, so he gets signed. He gets sent to Bluefield, and his mechanics were a mess last season in his pro debut. And the stuff was not good. The results were not great. He worked on his mechanics a lot. He came back in the offseason, came back this year. Suddenly he's hiding the ball a lot better. He came back with a slider that he can throw in different ways, different types of slider. He can break it different fashions. He can throw it harder or softer. He has a cutter. He throws a sinker. He can throw hard, and he can move it. And that kind of speed, location, deception, that's why Jackson Reese was so good, first for the Lansing Lugnuts, now moving up to Dunedin. You can't see it out of his hands, and you're not sure which way it's moving. It really was tremendous fun to watch him pitch for the Lansing Lugnuts because batters couldn't hit him. I'm seeing him do very much the same things up there with the DJs right now. Why wouldn't you consider him a potential major league reliever if he goes up to AA New Hampshire and excels in their bullpen next year? The other guys out of the Lansing Lugnuts pen, who it's going to be fascinating to watch them as they go onward. Marcus Reyes, the left-hander, has turned his season around. And if you consider his numbers, all right, so right now Reyes has a 2.14 ERA. He's a lefty. He throws 91 miles per hour at hottest. He throws a cutter. He throws a slider, a changeup. He has four or five different windups. He will go hesitation, will rotate on the waist and show his back to the batter. He will go quick pitch. And nobody in the Midwest League can hit him right now. He's been just too good for them. With his command, in addition to all of the different deception that he presents, Reyes has been top-notch. Probably should have been promoted a while back. They just did not have room for him in Dunedin. We like having him around. Cree Finfrock is throwing 95, 96, up to 97 miles an hour. Keep an eye on Finfrock. He's a potential major league reliever down the road. John Rakowski is now up in A Advanced Dunedin, throws 94 to 96 miles an hour, a sinking fastball, and he stands 6'7", so he's throwing it directly downhill. His slider is 88 to 91. So those games that he's come out and he's thrown 96 with the fastball and 91 on the slider, good luck His name looks like it should be pronounced Rakowski. It's Rakowski. Keep an eye on him. I think that those are the major relievers that you should circle, stock away in your back pocket. It's been really fun to watch them work. One last segment on Around the Nest this week. That is from AAA and from Pat Mulicaro. Pat's in a meeting as we're recording this show. However, he was able to record something, sent it my way, in terms of what's going on with the Buffalo Bisons.
Hi, Jesse. The Bisons are taking on the Durham Bulls this weekend as Anthony Kay will make his Salem Field debut, now into his fourth start with the Bisons. Anthony Kay has yet to start at home for Buffalo and now makes the start in front of the hometown fans in what should be a fun night here at the ballpark. Buffalo actually take on the wild card leader in the wild card chase right now. Durham is in front of Charlotte and the Bisons. Buffalo within striking distance of not only the wild card, which is kind of in the striking distance, but kind of a little bit further away. But the Bisons definitely taking aim at the International League Northern Division pennant as Buffalo sits three games back of Scranton-Wilkes-Barre heading into play today. And Scranton has been reeling since pretty much all of the Yankee injuries have caught up to the Rail Riders. They have won just two of their last 10 games. Now, the Bisons not much better, 4-6, but being 4-6 in the last 10, they have trimmed their five-game deficit down to three and have a chance this weekend to close it even further as maybe the best team in the International League, Gwinnett, is hosting Scranton-Wilkes-Barre for a three-game set. When all is said and done this weekend, the Bisons could find themselves, it's not mathematically impossible, that they could find themselves tied for the division lead once this weekend ends, and it's a sprint to the finish. We are 18 games away from the end of the regular season. The Bisons will head out on the road next week, four games in Rochester, and then head home for their final seven-game homestand of the year, three against Pawtucket, four more against the Red Wings. So Rochester is actually a game behind Buffalo in the division lead. Buffalo three games out, Rochester is four. There is a chance whoever wins those eight games, or the majority of those eight games in that rest of the season series, that could likely determine who wins the Northern Division, with Scranton reeling right now and the Bisons having probably maybe the most complete team with now potentially five starting pitchers, Brock Stewart joining the rotation after being optioned from Toronto. In the division, at least, the Bisons could have maybe the best and most complete starting nine and rotation going into the final 2 weeks of the season. It's going to be fun here at Salem Field, and I know fans are very excited for tonight, the rest of this weekend, and the seven home games left. So we'll see how things shake out, but definitely pennant fever and playoff fever has found its way to Buffalo. And if the Bisons don't find a way to make it, there needs to be a lot of disappointed folks, myself included, in that camp, as hopefully the Toronto Blue Jays affiliates can have one more team in the postseason coming up in just a couple of weeks from now. Hope to join you live again next week, Jesse. Sorry couldn't make it work this week, but looking forward to catching up with you again next week around the nest.
Pennant fever in Buffalo. I love it. So we will keep our eyes toward AAA and the International League. From Buffalo and Pat Mulicaro, AA New Hampshire, Tyler Zickel, A Advanced Need and Jim Tarabokia, Single A Lansing and Adam Jaxa, Rob Fahan, Short Season A Vancouver, and Advanced Rookie Bluefield, and Zach Helton. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. Big thanks to Hayden Godfrey and the Minor Leaguer. Thanks to Bluebird Banter. Thanks to you for posting in your comments and your questions. I'm at Jay Goldstrass, JGOLDSTRASS. And Around the Nest as a whole is at Around Nest. Let us know any questions, any comments, anything we can do to continue to improve, and I'll offer you our latest observations around each week around the Blue Jays minor league system. This is our joy. This is also our jobs to watch these games and deliver the broadcasts your way. For another week of Around the Nest, I hope you enjoyed. Until next week, enjoy the baseball.